Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor, and I'm joined by Stuart Smith. Hi Stuart, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good, James. How are you doing?
I'm alright, thanks. I understand that you have watched two very entertaining matches, so let's get straight to it and talk about probably the biggest talking point of the weekend, which happened in Yamagata against Okayama. This one finished 1-0 to Okayama. They scored, Takaya Kimura scored in the 92nd minute. The big talking point, though, was in the 11th minute when there was an errant back pass that Yamagata keeper Masaaki Goto had to scramble to clear off the line with his hand. An indirect free kick was given and a red card, which meant that Yamagata had to play for 80 minutes with just 10 men, and they were unfortunately unable to hold out. I only saw the highlights to this one. Stu, you watched the whole game. Can you tell us a bit more about what on earth happened?
Well, I think, I mean, obviously the game changed early on with that red card. And I should say that when it happened, I genuinely was unsure of the rule. It looked to me like it felt like it should have been a red card, because had he not dived back, that ball was definitely going in. So you could say, could you say it was dogs or a denial of goal scoring opportunity? I think it looks that way for me, but upon further inspection and further scrolling down my Twitter timeline, it appears that the decision of awarding an indirect free kick was correct, but the red card was incorrect, I think, from what I understand. Apparently goalkeepers can't get sent off for deliberate handball in their own area, which again, it sounds a bit weird to phrase it that way. But I don't know, what do you think? Because for me, the visceral reaction was that should be a red card, because it's a flagrant attempt to stop a goal being scored that otherwise would have been scored. What did you think?
Yeah, well, I only watched the highlights of this after seeing the clip and a lot of the discussion on Twitter. Stan Orlowitz shared or retweeted an article about it and summarized it helpfully, so I didn't have to actually read the article. So thanks, Dan. And so I came at it from a different perspective. But I agree. I think because it looks so dramatic, the way he dived full length and flicked it off the line, perhaps made it look worse than it was. But yeah, the apparently the rule is that you can't get, if you're a goalie, you can't get a red card for deliberate handball in your own area, picking up a back pass.
Mm.
So yeah, indirect free kick, fine.
But so I wondered. I was going to say, I wondered if anybody actually knew that rule.
Because obviously, these knew it, but apparently not.
Well, yeah, precisely. And Goto, the goalkeeper, ex Kanazawa, I think you'll find as well, he didn't seem to put up too much of a fight. He seemed genuinely resigned to his fate. And no one seemed to have a really clear idea of the rules, I think, and that's including the referee and I would assume the assistants and the fourth official, because and to be fair, I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like that. I can't remember off the top of my head seeing a goalkeeper. I've seen goalkeepers embarrassed by back passes a lot of times, but I've never seen them kind of scoop one off the line in such a dramatic way. So, I do think, I do think that the visuals of it, impacted the referee's decision. But when I was watching it, I genuinely thought that no one really understood the rules, because they didn't seem any kind of huge kind of turn against the referee. I didn't see Klamovsky go berserk at the fourth official. and I didn't see any kind of, I didn't see any kind of really passionate remonstration saying, this is the rule, that is wrong, go and check it out, or whatever. So, yeah, it was an odd one. I mean,
I think it's quite common from what I've heard and read by people who referee matches. It's quite common for players in particular to not actually know a lot of the rules.
Mm.
Obviously, you know the basic ones, like you need to know how to play the basics of football, but they don't know. I'd say this is maybe a kind of an obscure rule, or an amendment to a rule or something like that. So perhaps, I mean, it's not such a surprise that the players didn't know it and the manager, but I think it is a surprise to me that the referees of the, you know, refereeing team, the officials didn't know it. But on the other hand, everyone does make mistakes.
Mm.
It's just unfortunate for Yamagata that this was a mistake that effectively robbed them of a chance to win, really.
Yeah, it did. And like, from the resulting indirect free kick, so Goto scooped the ball more or less off the goal line, but obviously you can't take a free kick, an indirect free kick on the goal line. So they moved it to the 6 yard, at the edge of the 6 yard box. And it's always a fun thing to watch, like the indirect free kick in the area where everybody's lined up on the goal line. And like, I never understand why, I know it's an indirect free kick, but I never understand why there's a touch, why someone has to roll it to the person to hit. If I was Jordi Boyce, I would have just blasted that ball as hard as I could, because it would have almost certainly hit someone on the way in.
Mm.
And therefore it would have been counted as a goal.
I would
assume.
Because
to be honest, you do well. If you're whacking a ball as hard as you can from the 6 yard line with 10 men on the goal line, you do well to miss all of them. Like,
but
it might not get you. It might take someone's head off or take someone's kneecap out. Or, but the chances are it would hit someone and go in. I would have thought. I don't know.
But that would be a deflected direct free kick rather than an indirect free kick. I think isn't it the first touch?
Is that right?
I don't know.
Oh, I'm making a complete fool of myself now. Yikes. I don't know any of the rules. Players, Jesus.
Playing the managers, the podcast hosts and guests.
That's interesting. I'd be interested to find that out for real. Because if so... imagine that. talking about the rules and things like that. Anyway, I'm sure we'll come back to that. But I think that, like this happened in the, I think it was the 10th minute or something. So it left Yamagata basically the full length of the game to go through. But they actually played really well. And like, even with 10 men, they managed to get the ball down. I thought Kota Yamada played really, really well. His kind of mini battle against Jordi Boyce at the back was a really interesting one to watch, because obviously Yamada is very kind of shifty and technical, and like, he kind of drifts into space. Like, Boyce is kind of more your rudimentary kind of center back. He's big, he's strong, he's physical, he's really good with the ball at his feet, but actually tracking kind of more diminutive, like speedy players, is more of a challenge for him. And I think both players had their moments when they came on top of their respective battles, but I thought it was that was a good battle in and of itself. Yamagata obviously tired as the second half went through, but there weren't that many clear-cut chances for Okayama. And Okayama's bench, I think, like, when we talk about Kumamoto and Niigata, will come on to Niigata's strength in depth from the bench. But kind of Okayama brought on Kimura, who scored the goal. They brought on Mitchell Duke. They brought in Stefan Mulk as well. They used their substitutes well, and they used their substitutes to kind of like really turn the screw physically. Obviously, Duke's a big guy up front. Stefan Mulk is busy in and about the midfield as well. And I think that, yeah, the winning goal came kind of deep into stoppage time. A long throw flicked on by Yanagi, the centre-back, and yeah, Kimura was there to nod in from close range. You could sense the fatigue from the Yamagata players. Yeah. No one kind of tracked the run. I think everybody was just absolutely knackered, basically, for trying to kind of hold on and do their thing for 80 minutes. And yeah, I mean, Kiyama would be happy going back to one of his old stomping grounds and taking a win. I think it's pretty harsh, to be quite frank, on Yamagata. I think they actually played some really good stuff, and they played really well. They stayed coherent for most of the game. They were just let down by kind of their lack of, well, not even lack of anything. They were just tired, and that's to be expected. Yeah. And when you play with 10 men for 80 minutes.
Mm. Yeah. I only watched the highlights of this one, like I said, and I think what was interesting, what stood out to me, was the fact that after that red card, there weren't actually that many highlights of Okayama chances, which suggests to me that Yamagata did a really good job of standing firm, defending well against, you know, against an extra man. But yeah, it's a long time to play with a man down, and yeah, you got to feel sorry for Goto. I assume that his red card will be rescinded. I don't think that there's any way they're going to replay the match or the final, you know, 79 minutes of the match or whatever, because the decision for the free kick was correct. It was just the card that was wrong. So, you know, he won't get a suspension or anything. Yeah, also, he wasn't even the only keeper to handle a back pass this weekend because the Tochigi keeper did it in the first minute of their game against Kanazawa.
He's a liability, that guy. I mean, he had himself a pretty eventful game.
For his game. But back to Yamagata Okayama, I think this was Okayama's first win in five, which obviously they'll be very happy with. And now they're equal fifth, which is excellent. But Yamagata, they started last season quite poorly. They seem to be starting this season quite poorly as well. Down in 19th, just one win, three draws and four losses. What do you think of them overall so far?
It's an interesting one, because obviously the evidence from last year of Monteiro Yamagata and Peter Klimovsky's side playing some great football is still it's still very fresh in the memory. I think it's important to look at the changes that have happened in Yamagata this past off season. Obviously, Vinicius Araujo is no longer there anymore. They replaced him with, I think, Fujimoto Yoshiki from Ehime, who's a good player himself, but he's not as good as Araujo, as a kind of a line leader and a focal point of the attack. So I think when you add that into the mix with, obviously, Hikaru Nakahara is not there anymore. He's at Seretso. And Ryunosuke Kabayama is back at, I think he's back at Yokohama F. Marinos. So suddenly, last year, they had such a potent front line, because obviously they had Kota Yamada drifting from his central kind of center-right position, basically wherever he wanted to. And when you had to defend Araujo, when you had to defend Nakahara as well, Kabayama as well, there were so many different ways that Yamagata could hurt you. This year, I think they're still trying to find their attacking feet. Obviously, Fujimoto has scored, I think he's scored four goals so far this year. So he's not actually doing that badly. But I think just the general link-up play of the attacking unit isn't there. And I think also something that has maybe flown under the radar a little bit is last year, Klimovsky had Kenta Kawai as his assistant. And obviously, Kawai is now in charge at Sagan Tosu, who seem to be doing relatively well in J1. And I wonder if that's kind of had a little bit of, whether it's a, I wouldn't call it a destabilizing effect, but Kawai is very highly thought of. And he's obviously, he did a really good job in almost impossible circumstances at Ehime. He was part of the team that came in with Klimovsky. I don't know whether Klimovsky kind of selected him, or whether he was, or if he was foisted upon him by Yamagata saying, "Look, we'll hire you, but we want someone else to come in with you." But now that he's not there, to look at the difference between last year and this year, you have to kind of understand what's different. And obviously Kawhi not being there is kind of a glaring thing that is different. They have played well in the past couple of weeks. I know Klimovsky after the game as well said in his interviews, he said that they've deserved more from their kind of last 3 or 4 games, I think he said. I haven't watched them in depth in the last 3 or 4 games. So I watched their last 2 games and they have played well, but at some point you probably want them to play, I don't know if you want them to play not as well, but pick up a lucky win, or whether you want them just to kind of scrap down and really put their heads down and just try and not lose. I think I'm not particularly worried about Yamagata. I'm not particularly worried about Klimovsky. But having said that, they do need to start bucking their ideas up pretty soon. But I saw enough last year with Klimovsky to believe that he's got it well within his locker to try and get them on an upward curve. But they do need to start kind of getting on board quickly, and they do need to start turning some of these good performances into wins, and they can do without kind of bad luck on their side for the upcoming games. But yeah, it's an interesting one to see Yamagata down there. I don't think anybody expected it.
No, and like you said, we know that they're capable of playing good stuff, and they're perfectly capable of going on another long run, which could propel them right up into the playoff picture. So yeah, they just need something to go their way, get a result, and maybe that will start the ball rolling. One more note on this match. I've just noticed that both teams had a player called Thiago Alves. So I wonder if they swapped shirts at the end.
well, it was one of the things that DAZN, the broadcaster, brought up in the build-up. Both teams have a Thiago Alves. One on the bench, one starting for Okayama.
They should have chosen them as their key men for the analysis and stuff at half-time.
Well, I think anyway. that Yamagata needed their Thiago Alves. I mean, I think that was his first kind of appearance since joining. So they desperately need kind of someone else to help take the load on up front. So hopefully for Yamagata, I hope Thiago Alves, Alves for one of them, to take on the load.
All right, let's move on to the other match then. The other one that you chose to talk about is Kumamoto against Niigata. This one, Kumamoto took the lead in the 4th minute thanks to Koki Sakamoto, but Kaito Taniguchi equalized in the 21st minute. Then he lobbed Yuya Sato from long distance, a hit of nostalgia for long-term J-League watchers there. And then Koji Suzuki got the winning goal for Niigata in the 92nd minute. So it finished Kumamoto 1, Niigata 2. What did you make of this game, Shu?
This is a really good game. I don't really need any kind of motivation to watch Takeshi Oki's brand of football. Really like watching how he sets the game up and how he likes to play, because he already knows one way to play, and that go on the attack. And Niigata as well. Niigata have got a plethora of attacking options available to them. So I always thought this was going to be a pretty good game. It looked really good weather. I don't know what the weather was like in Kanazawa over the weekend, but it wasn't particularly nice round in Gifu yesterday, and it looked pretty nasty all through the weekend. But obviously Kumamoto has its own microclimate around there. It was really good. I think, I forget the number off the top of my head, there was something like 36 goal attempts during the game. And I think there were 23 attempts on target. I think 8 for Moldo, 15 for Niigata. And so this was really kind of who could really land that sucker punch. And obviously, like, Kumamoto went ahead early on, really nicely taken goal. They could have had more in the first half. I think they missed a couple of chances. But yeah, Taniguchi kind of benefiting from some, shall we say, lax defensive play and what's the best way? A bit of avant-garde goalkeeping from Yuya Sato, just casually strolling way out of his area. And yeah, obviously Taniguchi used to play for Kumamoto. I don't know if he celebrated the goal. He probably should have done because it was a good goal. And then after that, it just seemed like it was two punch drunk boxers going like round for round. But I think that I mentioned earlier, like, just the substitutes that that Niigata were able to bring on. I think they brought on, who they bring on, Yoshiaki Takagi, they brought on Shinsuke Mito, they brought Ippei Onozuka, and obviously Koji Suzuki as well, who went on to score the winner. The winner, I mean, deep into additional time again, like, we never got the wide screen view of that. Kumamoto were appealing for offside, and whether it was or not, I don't know, but it was a cruel blow. It was cruel for Kumamoto, because I don't think either team deserved to lose that game. That's such a cliche, but both teams played really well. Both teams played, say, like, I don't want to say the right way, but ways I like to see football played. They get the ball, they're quick, they pass with purpose, and they have good technical players. And it was all in all, it was a really good game to watch, I felt. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I thought at times I thought this was a little bit disjointed, because there were a lot of misplaced passes in midfield, or giving the ball away. But then the way you just explained it, you're right. Now I think of it, it was because they're both trying to attack, which is also I quite like to watch that kind of football as well. So this was a really fun game to watch. And I'll give Yuya Sato some credit. He did make a couple of really good saves.
He did.
As well. And he was helped by his defence, who made a few, I think it was a couple of goal line clearances and a header or an interception for a close opportunity as well. So they defended really well, Kumamoto. But for the final goal, the last goal, I don't know what they were doing, because they all seemed to be standing in a bunch in the middle of the pitch. And that's why Suzuki could make that diagonal run away into space. But like you said, there wasn't a wide... The cameras didn't pick it up either. They were as surprised as the Kumamoto defenders were. And so we didn't get a full view of what really happened there. But I think they were switched off temporarily, and they paid the price. But I thought Kumamoto defended really well. They had to defend a lot. Niigata did that thing that they often do, where they gradually take control. And for the last half hour, it seems to be almost all Niigata, except for one or two chances for the opponent. So Kumamoto had to defend really well for quite a long time. And it is unfortunate for them that they couldn't quite hold on, same as Yamagata in the other game. But yeah, this was really fun. I've seen Kumamoto a few times. They came to Kanazawa last week. I went to that match. They were really good fun to watch. They go for it, and that's what I like to see most of the time.
It's just the way that Aoki kind of sets his stall up. But like, it's just like they're a lot tighter defensively than his teams in Gifu were. But I suppose he's had some more experience, and he knows that he has to try and kind of do something defensively. But he doesn't seem to skimp on his kind of attacking options. They move the ball like they move the ball about quite well. I remember like watching like a short corner routine in the first half, where they kind of worked it all the way to the other side of the penalty area, and it resulted in a shot. And I thought that's really well worked, because they bunched all the Niigata defenders in the box, but then they pulled out some players to create space. And I thought, that's a really well designed play. And I think that a lot of the stuff that Kumamoto do, I think it's stuff they work on the training ground. Now, I know for a fact that Oki trains players probably more than most other clubs. I remember watching, I remember speaking to players at Gifu, I remember speaking to coaches at Gifu that said they had like 3-hour training sessions, and that they, like, the players weren't used to practicing so much. So I know he does a lot of stuff on the training ground, and you know, they're doing a lot of stuff that kind of I didn't expect them to be doing so well, because they were, it's not that they were like, they weren't an excellent J3 side, they're a good J3 side, but they weren't blowing the socks off the competition. And I thought they'd struggle this year, and they might struggle as well, because I think when we get into the summer, I think squad depth will be tested quite a lot. But you know, they don't look out of their depth, which is what I thought they might end up being this year. So, but Niigata, like I said, they've got just too many kind of options to bring on. I mean, when you bring on Koji Suzuki and Ipe Shinozuka with like 10 minutes to go, the defense must think, oh Christ, what, not this, please. But that's what quote unquote big teams and big squads can afford to do. So they shuffle the pack, and they take advantage, much like Okayama did at Yamagata. They brought on their substitutes to try and turn the screw. I think Niigata did the same, and I think they deserve credit for that. But all in all, I think, like you said, it was an entertaining game.
Yeah, I've seen quite a lot of Niigata this year as well, because like this squad has got so much talent in it. I always think, well, there's bound to be something good happening in this. And I remember watching them a few times at the start of the season. I mean, right at the start. We're still quite early on, aren't we? Right at the start. And they were a little bit, not lackluster, but they didn't have that end product. But I'm preparing for this episode and realised that suddenly they're up to fifth. When did that happen? They've got three wins, three draws and two losses. So I think that when I think about it now, I think, well, they should be up there with the talent that they've got. You said the players they can bring on is incredible. There are not many teams in J2 who have those kind of quality players available as substitutes on a weekly basis. So, yeah, absolutely. Fifth is probably the least they should be.
Well, I think they've still got players to come in as well, because like I'm pretty sure Thomas Deng hasn't played for them yet, the Australian defender who joined from Urawa over the winter. I mean, he's an international defender, and suddenly, I mean, Michael James didn't play in this game as well, who is another kind of really, really good defender. They've got really good goalkeeper. They've got Ryosuke Kojima in goal. They're good. Like, and they should be good. And like, they, on their day, and with the playoffs coming back this year, they are back, right? The playoffs. I'm not deluded.
For now. Okay.
Good. Okay. With the playoffs this year, I think they're going to be a very, very dangerous team. Because obviously they'll go for like the top two, but I think Yokohama are looking pretty good there. And there's a whole lot of competition for the second automatic promotion spot. You probably don't want to play Niigata in any one-off games, because they've just got so much in them. Like they look like they could put any kind of mixture of eight forward players on and be dangerous. And if they manage to tighten up at the back, and like obviously they've got the experience of Kazuhiko Chiba there. Tagami is a really good defender as well. But if you bring in Michael James, if you bring in Thomas Deng, they're going to be kind of difficult to play against. So I expect good things from Niigata going forward.
Yeah. We're still only 8 games in, so there's still plenty of time for them to show us even more. Or, of course, for everything to go horribly wrong. Or even less.
Wrong. Yeah, yeah.
all right, that'll do, I think, for part one. Thanks, Stu. It was very interesting to hear your thoughts on those games. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to round up the rest of the action from Match Day 8.
Welcome back. Let's have a look at the other matches from last weekend, starting at Mitsuzawa, where Yokohama FC heaped more pain on FC Ryukyu with 3 goals in the first 20 minutes. Ryukyu's attempts to play the ball out from the back led to an interception and a smart finish from Koki Ogawa after just 4 minutes. 5 minutes later, a low cross from Ryoya Yamashita was dummied by a couple of Yokohama FC players before Sho Ito smacked it in from about 12 yards. Then, 10 minutes later, good work from Yamashita down the right again led to a partial clearance that Sho Ito volleyed in to make it 3-0. Ryukyu gave themselves a glimmer of hope soon after, with Koki Kiyotake's pinpoint cross landing perfectly on Takashi Kanai's head. 3-1 after 26 minutes, and a good save by Sven Broderson from a Kiyotake free kick just before half-time kept it that way. Ito had a chance for a hat-trick midway through the second half, but Junto Taguchi was out quickly to save. Broderson made another good save from Katsuya Nakano, and it finished 3-1, with Ryukyu regretting their early capitulation. Hot on the heels of Yokohama FC in second place are Tokyo Verdy, who beat Oita Trinita 1-0 thanks to a Ren Kato goal just before half-time. The teams traded chances early on, with the best coming for Oita's Shun Nagasawa in the 10th minute. He steered across just wide. Midway through the half, Verdy's Sugimoto and Koike had reasonable chances, but Oita's defence stood firm. The breakthrough came in the 43rd minute. Ryuga Sato switched play to the left, Ryota Kajikawa laid the ball off for Kato, and his low shot seemed to surprise Oita keeper Shun Takagi, who tried and failed to save it with his foot. In the second half, Hokuto Shimoda forced a good save from Verdy goalie Hisaya Sato, but apart from that, there were few clear opportunities, and Verdy remain unbeaten. Just behind Tokyo Verdy in third are Machida Zelvia. They drew 1-1 with Jeff United on Sunday. Machida goalie Koki Fukui made a good point-blank save from Solomon Sakuragawa early on, and Koya Kazuma blazed over for Jeff in a first half that was low on goal-mouth action. Fukui made another good save on the hour mark from Toshiyuki Takagi, and the rebound was cleared off the line by a defender. Machida took the lead in the 77th minute after Jeff failed to clear the ball. Play was recycled, and Taiki Hirato's cross was headed in by Ariya Jasuru Hasegawa. Jeff hit back 3 minutes later with a Jang Min-gyu header from a corner, and it finished 1-1. There was another goal rush in a Vegalta Sendai game, this time away to Vanfore Kofu. Yusuke Minagawa got the first goal for Sendai in the 11th minute, shooting low into the bottom left corner. Motoki Hasegawa equalised 8 minutes later, his fourth of the season, a right-footed shot with the outside of his boot from the edge of the area. Sendai's Keimen Togashi scored 2 goals early in the second half. The first, a loose ball after a dribble into the box by Ryoma Kida. The second, a ball squared by Minagawa. In between, he hit the post. Kazushi Mitsuhira pulled one back for Kofu with 7 minutes left, turning in a deflected cross at the back post. A little earlier, Sendai keeper Stojic made a tremendous double save. It ended Kofu 2, Sendai 3, so Kofu are languishing in 20th, while Sendai are 4th. In 6 of Sendai's 8 games, one of the teams has scored 3 goals, and the other 2 games were goalless draws. Speaking of goalless draws, Tokushima Vortis had one against Vivara Nagasaki. Ken Tokura of Nagasaki almost scored early on, but Jose Aurelio Suarez in the Tokushima goal was down full stretch to his left to turn it around the post. Not to be outdone, Masaya Tomizawa did the same at the other end from a Chie Edo Ojong Kawakami shot. Suarez made another good save midway through the first half from a corner, and then again on the hour mark from an Edgar Junior header, and then again 6 minutes later from Tokura again. There was an encore to the Suarez show in the 88th minute with a fine foot save from a close-range Tokura shot, and there was still time for Tomizawa to show what he can do with a double save in stoppage time. Tokushima are still unbeaten, one win and seven draws so far. There was not such an impressive goalkeeping display from Tochigi's Shuhei Kawata in their 2-0 home loss to Zeigen Kanazawa. He picked up a back pass in the first minute, but the resulting free kick was blocked. He did save at point-blank range from the resulting corner, but his mistake on 30 minutes gifted Kanazawa their first goal. He came charging out to clear the ball, but only succeeded in passing it to ex-Tochigi striker Yohei Toyoda, 35 yards out, who curled a left-footed lob over the defenders and in off the post, the second Toyocopter takeoff in two games. Kawata did save well from Masamichi Hayashi in the 53rd minute, but Hayashi got the better of Kawata from the penalty spot a couple of minutes later. His shot hit Kenya Onodera's arm at close range, so Hayashi made it 2-0 with a confident penalty, and the rest of the game was fairly uneventful. Kanazawa are still unbeaten away, and also unbeaten in the last four games. Another team that's unbeaten in four is Renault for Yamaguchi. A second-half goal from Takaya Numata was enough for them to see off bottom club Omiya Ardija. There was not much action of note in the first half, but Yamaguchi's half-time substitute Kazuhito Kishida almost had an immediate impact when he rattled the crossbar. Numata's goal came from a corner in the 71st minute. It was flicked on at the near post, and he was in the middle of the six-yard box to knock it in, or at least let it bounce off him and go in. So, Omiya still winless, Yamaguchi up to 8th with 2 wins and 5 draws and only 1 loss. Just below them in 9th is Zespa Kasats Gunma. They bounced back from a bad week to secure a 2-1 win over Mito Hollyhock. Gunma went in front after 17 minutes. Ponderous defending from Mito left-back Hayate Matsuda let Masaya Kojima get round him and cross the ball for Shunpei Fukuhori to score. Mito had a penalty just after the hour mark. A cross found Kosuke Kinoshita close to goal. His effort hit a defender's arm and was caught by the goalie. A penalty was given and Kinoshita scored his fourth goal of the season. Gunma won it with a good passing move started by Shu Hiramatsu in central midfield. He played it left to Junya Kato, who centred it for Tatsuya Uchida to strike. Gunma's losing run stops at 2. Mito's losing run extends to 2. And finally, Blaublitz Akita welcomed Iwate Gruja Morioka to the Soyu Stadium. The hosts took an early lead with Keita Saito heading in Taira Shige's cross in the 5th minute. Ryutaro Iyo tested Taishi Brandon Nozawa with a free kick 5 minutes later, but the Iwate goalie did well to reach it. 5 minutes after that, Ryota Nakamura got in front of Nozawa to head in an Iyo free kick from the left touchline and double the lead. Iwate got on the score sheet in the 37th minute when Yuki Shikama got the final touch, an overhead kick, on a goalmouth scramble in the aftermath of a corner. Akita seemed to have a habit of starting the second half strongly, and it worked for them again here. A high cross from the left, a bit of head tennis, a deflected shot, and Shota Aoki sticking out a leg to redirect the ball in and give Akita a 3-1 lead. Shige almost made it 4 late on after a long counter-attack, but his shot went just wide. It ended 3-1, and Akita are sitting pretty in 10th on a run of 3 games without a loss. I'll be back in a minute with Stu to preview match day 9.
Welcome back, everyone. Stu's back as well, and he's going to help me preview match day 9. And the fixtures are split quite nicely over the weekend. There are 5 matches on Saturday, the 9th of April, starting at 1 o'clock with Iwate against Gunma. Then 2 games at 2 o'clock, Omiya against Kofu and Nagasaki against Machida. Then at 3 o'clock, there's Tokyo Verdy against Kumamoto. And then 5 o'clock, Ryukyu against Okayama. Stu, any games there that take your fancy?
Yeah, I think for the relegation element of it, even though it is a bit early to be speaking relegation, Omiya Adija taking on Vanfori Corfu. So obviously Omiya are rock bottom and Vanfori Corfu are third from bottom. It's a really big game. I mean, we don't know if the respective managers will be in charge for this game that are currently in charge. Masahiro Shimoda for Omiya and Tatsuma Yoshida for Vanfori Corfu. It's a big game, and should either team win, it could prove a big fillip for their season. So I think I'll definitely be keeping an eye on that game. I think the other game, what's the international game this week? It's Ryukyu Okayama, that's what you said,
yeah.
Right?
Mm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I doubt it's going to be 0-0. I don't want to put the kiss of death on the international game for YouTube this week, but Ryukyu's defense is horrendous. I think Okayama have got some pretty good attacking options for them. Yeah, I mean, Ryukyu just need to, they need something to kind of jumpstart their season. Whether it'll come against a very kind of highly organized Fajiano Okayama team that is coming off that that win at Yamagata, I don't know. That's a tricky one. Like I said, I think there'll be goals in it, but if I'm a Ryukyu fan, I'm not particularly confident going into that game. So those are the two games that I think I'll keep an eye on this weekend.
I think those are good choices. If it is 0-0, please don't at us. Not our fault.
I'm not responsible for 0-0 draws.
So it's at JTalk ET John.
Yeah, that guy.
The others, I quite like the look of Nagasaki Machida. I think both got a lot of attacking firepower, and I don't think we've seen the best of Nagasaki yet. Apart from that one game against Oita, I think there's still a lot to come from them. And Tokyo Verde against Kumamoto will be fun as well, because Verde are quite a good attacking team, and they're second in the league, which is very exciting. And Kumamoto, we talked about them earlier, but like you said, they play a lot of good attacking, quite committed to the attacking football. So I think that one will be quite interesting too. So that's Saturday. And then there are six more games on Sunday the 10th. They're all at 2 o'clock. There's Sendai against Yamaguchi, Yamagata against Akita, Jeff against Yokohama FC, Niigata play Tochigi, Kanazawa play Mito, and Oita take on Tokushima. Any interesting games for you there, Stu?
Well, we've got the John Steele derby between Jeff United Chiba and Yokohama FC. I'd be interested to know who he's cheering for in that game. Although I do get the sense now that he's more of a YSCC supporter. I don't know if you get that feeling as well.
Yeah.
No, it's kind of... He's kind of skewing the J2 vibe and heading down to YSCC. But we got the John Steele derby in Chiba. I think we spoke in depth about Monteiro Yamagata earlier on, needing to get something. They host Akita, like you said, and Akita, they're proving me wrong. I thought Akita would struggle really a lot this year. After a rocky start, they just seem to be turning it round a little bit. I think they'll prove a difficult match for Yamagata. I think it'll be an interesting one there at the ND Soft Stadium. And yeah, what was the other one? Draw specialists. Tokushima Vortis head to Oita for another point to celebrate. I think another single point on their march towards mid table is on the cards there. Your guys have got Mito Hollyhock, right?
Yeah, now this one's interesting, I think, because the last five games between these teams have been won by Mito. And the last four have finished 2-1, 3-2, 4-2, and 3-2. And in all four of those games, Mito have scored in the 85th minute or later. So obviously in three of those, it was the winning goal. And I think in at least two of those, it was actually in stoppage time. So I might be going to this one and I might regret it.
If you leave just before the end, if you leave on like 80 minutes to beat the traffic, You can be in denial and just say, "Yeah, I think we picked up a point."
Just drive home with my fingers in my ears, going,
"Yeah."
Steering with my elbows. So yeah, that one is usually an entertaining fixture. I agree with you. I think Yamagata Akito is an interesting one because of all the things we said about Yamagata. It'll be interesting to see how they respond to that adversity from that particular match, but also from their start to the season generally. And also because Akita, they're obdurate, I would say. They're never an easy opponent. And yeah, they had a bad start, but they're coming good, I think. And I don't know if that's because they have a plan B now, or if it's just that plan A happens to be working a lot at the moment. But they'll probably fancy their chances of another win there. And yeah, I think there's quite a few good fixtures coming up this weekend. Unfortunately, all the Sunday ones are on at the same time, so just to pick one. And hope that you
flick between the chat. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thanks, Stu. It's really good to hear from you about all things J2. And thanks to everyone who downloads and streams and likes and retweets and does all that stuff. We really appreciate that. And we also appreciate everyone who supports us on Patreon. If you'd like to know more, go to JTalkPod. Oh no, it's not that, is it? It's patreon.com/JTalkPod. I should have written that bit down. And of course, thank you for listening. And don't go anywhere though, because coming up next, Magic Mike Innes is here with all the latest from J3 in JTalk Short Corner.
JTalk Extra Time.
Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on fixtures in round 4 of the J3 season and previewing games coming up in round 5. First, some items of J3 news since the last pod. Two more transfers to mention. Ryuji Sawakami has joined struggling Gainare Tottori on loan from Cerezo Osaka until the end of the season. Sawakami, a 28-year-old forward, was loaned to Sagamihara in J2 last year and has J3 experience with Cerezo Under-23 and Imabari. And at AC Nagano Parseiro, Yuki Stauff has brought in another player who turned out for him at YSCC Yokohama. That's goalkeeper Issei Ouchi, 21 years old, loaned from Yokohama FC. The arrival of Ouchi brings the number of keepers in the Nagano squad to 4 after first choice Sorki Yatagai was injured. Talking of injury, Matsumoto Yamaga have announced they expect forward Lukao to be out until late May after he damaged his arm in the round 2 win at YSCC. Now on to the round 4 action, and there were two matches on Saturday the 2nd of April, both decided by single goals scored just after half time. Previously winless Ehime FC got the better of YSCC Yokohama in a game of few chances at Mitsuzawa, a change to the starting lineup by Kiyotaka Ishimaru proving vital. The Ehime coach dropped the ineffective Riki Matsuda and instead began with midfielder Takashi Kondo in the unfamiliar role of main striker. And on 47 minutes, Shunsuke Motegi's corner bounced off YSCC's Ryohei Wakizaka to set up Kondo for an easy finish. Final score, YSCC 0, Ehime 1. 3 straight losses for YSCC, who can compete but they can't threaten. Ehime haven't clicked yet, but at least have something to build on. Meanwhile, Fujieda My FC picked up their second win of the season at home to Kamatemari Sanuki. The single goal in this match came from Ryota Iwabuchi, his first of the season, slotting home from 5 yards after Tomoyuki Doi had twice seen his efforts blocked. My FC did have the better of this one, but Kamatamare missed a golden opportunity to equalise 15 minutes from time when Kaito Kamiya conceded a penalty for a foul on Sanuki's Yujin Fukui. That's right, the same Kaito Kamiya who scored an own goal in round 3. Surprisingly, Fukui, 18 years old and less than 10 minutes into his first substitute appearance of the season, took the spot kick right down the middle and duly saved by Kei Uchiyama. Final score, Fujieda 1, Senuki 0. Aside from the penalty, comfortable enough for My FC, who should have scored a couple more, but perhaps encountered a stronger Kamatamare backline with Masataka Nishimoto in the team. There were scheduled to be 7 games on Sunday the 3rd, but COVID clusters at FC Gifu and Azul Claro Numazu meant that Gifu vs Gainare Tottori and Numazu's match at Vanrare Hachinohe were postponed. Elsewhere, the top 2 teams in the division, Fukushima United and AC Nagano Paseiro, played the first game at Fukushima's Toho no Minna Stadium since the installation of floodlights and the relaying of the pitch. The hosts began without key men Hiroki Higuchi and Kota Mori, but still went in front in the 11th minute, Junior Takahashi scoring for the 3rd straight game when he converted Hikaru Arai's cross from the right, a confident first-time finish from 10 yards. Toshihiro Hattori's team went close to going 2-0 ahead early in the second half, a Kazuki Dohana header from Uheiji Uehata's corner bringing a spectacular diving save from Kim Min-ho. Nagano coach Yuki Stealth battled to rescue the match, switching from 4-3 at the back and, with 13 minutes left, making a triple substitution. The equaliser came in the 90th minute, Fukushima having survived 2 goalmouth scrambles before Paseiro sub Hiroshi Azuma clipped the ball back into the box, where Keita Yoshioka held off Makoto Kawanishi, turned and fired low inside the post. Final score, Fukushima 1, Nagano 1. Heartbreak for Fukushima, although they remain unbeaten and in Takahashi have a striker who'll trouble most J3 defences. Paseiro can take the draw as a measure of their improvement under Stealth. This is a match that last season they only would have lost. A draw between the division's leading pair provided other teams with the chance to play catch-up, and moving into second place off the back of a stunning win at SC Sagamihara go Matsumoto Yamaga. And Matsumoto seemed to have found a young striker to compete with the best in J3. Ayumu Yokoyama almost put his team ahead after 90 seconds, pouncing on a Riku Tanaka error and firing just over from a narrow angle. And in the 11th minute, Yokoyama picked up the ball on the halfway line, raced to the edge of the area and, with the home defence backing off, slipped his shot past ex-Yamaga keeper Kentaro Kakoi and inside the post for 1-0. Midway through the first half, it was 2-0, the Sagamihara backline only half clearing Ryo Toyama's lofted ball into the box and then leaving space for Masato Tokida to bring it down and finish well from 15 yards. Sagamihara gave themselves a lifeline 5 minutes before the break, Daisuke Watabe overlapping down the left and crossing for Jungo Fujimoto to score a rare-headed goal past ex-Sagamihara keeper Victor. But 10 minutes after the restart, Yokoyama struck again, bullying Yudai Fujiwara out of possession and lashing it home with a clinical piece of shooting. The 19-year-old's delight was plain for all to see as he celebrated with the visiting fans drenched in the rain behind the goal. Matsumoto rounded off the scoring in injury time, rookie substitute Mao Hamano taking advantage of yet another Sagamihara mistake to feed Toyama, who fired low inside Kakui's far post. Final score, Sagamihara 1, Matsumoto 4. An unfathomably poor showing by Takuya Takagi's team, who looked as if they just wanted to get out of the wind and rain. Yamaga could only beat what was in front of them, and with Yokoyama, now the division's top scorer, they did so in style. Matsumoto were the only one of Fukushima's immediate challenges to pick up 3 points, as there were draws for Iwaki FC and Kagoshima United. A fixture played out in the warm sunshine of southern Kyushu was the derby between Tegevajaro Miyazaki and unbeaten Kagoshima, which attracted a crowd of 2,700, easily Tegevajaro's best since joining the J-League. The home team had chances aplenty to score in the first half, but found visiting keeper Fuma Shirasaka on top form. And having been on the defensive up until that point, Kagoshima went ahead on 50 minutes. The left-hand side of the Miyazaki defence exposed by the pace of Kota Hoshi, whose low cross to the near post was well finished by Koki Arita. The Miyazaki equaliser came 20 minutes from time when former Machina forward Yuki Okada found space on the edge of the area and beat Shirasaka with a right foot shot. Final score, Miyazaki 1, Kagoshima 1, Tegevajaro playing a similar style to last season but lacking the penetration of Kaito Umeda and Kosuke Fujioka. Kagoshima, I wonder, when they look back on the year, will they think results like this, the draw with Iwaki and the win over Matsumoto, were what set them up for success? And at the Iwaki Green Stadium against Nobuhiro Ishizaki's Katare Toyama, Iwaki FC took the lead in the 20th minute when Riku Saga, JFL Rookie of the Year 2021 and already catching the eye in J3, turned Naoto Ando inside out and crossed from the right for Hiroto Iwabuchi to steal between Shoma Kamata and Makoto Rindo and glance his header in. It was perennial substitute Yohei Ono who was instrumental in pulling Toyama back into the game, as with 9 minutes to go, he received from Shota Kawanishi a hopeful long pass into the box, shrugged off both Kyowan Hoshi and Rei Iezumi, and finished with the outside of his right foot. Final score, Iwaki 1, Toyama 1. Maddening for Iwaki coach Hiromasa Suguri as his team lost the lead when they lost a physical battle for the ball. While for Toyama, they may have got a point from a tough game, but things aren't going to plan. The squad rotation is ineffective, and where's Arthur Silva? Finally, Giravans Kitakyushu made it 2 wins in a row with a comfortable victory over FC Imabari at the Mikuni World Stadium. Imabari coach Kazuaki Hashikawa shuffled the team to make room for new signing Ralph Seintjens, but the Dutch striker was unable to make much of an impact. Indeed, the most effective forward on display was Kitakyushu's Yuya Takazawa, who on the quarter hour opened the scoring with a comfortable finish from 15 yards after good work from Taiga Maekawa and another informed player, Ryo Sato. Under Kenichi Amano, Sato has switched to the right midfield role from where in the 40th minute he sent in a powerful shot that Haruhiko Takimoto could only parry for Kotaro Fujikawa to poke over the line from close range. The game was over 3 minutes after the restart, and this time it was Takazawa who attacked down the Giravants right, cut inside Ryoya Izumi and sent a peach of a left foot shot curling inside the far post. Final score, Kita Kyushu 3, Imabari 0, and what a difference a confident striker makes for Gidamans. Takazawa, looking like he's refound his form from J3 2019 at Gunma. Imabari, subdued after a disrupted early season. Hashikawa, seemingly needing to find his best team on the fly. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round 4, noting that Gifu, Tottori, Hachinohe and Numazu have a game in hand as a result of their postponements. The top four are Fukushima holding on to first place despite their draw. They have 10 points. Matsumoto are up to second with 9. Then Nagano and Kagoshima have 8. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are Ehime up to 15th with 3 points. Then it's Numazu with 3. YSCC with 1, and at the bottom also with 1, Tottori. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the fixtures in round 5, with all 9 games on Sunday the 10th of April. Leaders Fukushima head down to Sanuki. Looks like there could be goals at the Alwyn Stadium where Matsumoto take on Miyazaki. A big early season fixture is 3rd against 5th, Nagano against Iwaki. Unbeaten Kagoshima are at home to Fujieda. It's Toyama against Gifu, both needing a win to spark their promotion challenge. A pair of relegated sides meet at the Ninjinia Stadium where Ehime take on Sagamihara. Can another former J2 team, Kita Kyushu, continue their winning streak at Numazu? Will Imabari start to live up to their potential as they host Hachinohe? And the bottom two meet at the Chubu Yajin Stadium in Yonago. It's Tottori against YSCC. With all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.